Chapter 15. Into Canluum. The air of Candor held the sharpness of new spring when Lan returned to the lands where he had always known he would die. Long past the arrival of spring in more southerly lands, here trees bore the first red of new growth, and a few scattered wildflowers dotted winter-brown grass, where shadows did not cling to patches of snow, yet the pale sun offered little warmth after the south gray clouds hinted at more than rain, and a cold, gusting breeze cut through his coat. Perhaps the south had softened him more than he knew. A pity, if so. He was almost home. Almost. 100 generations had beaten the wide road nearly as hard as the stone of the surrounding hills, and little dust rose, though a steady stream of ox-carts was leaving the morning farmers' markets in Canluum, and merchant trains of tall wagons, surrounded by mounted guards in steel caps and bits of armor, flowed toward the city's high gray walls. Here and there the chains of the Candori Merchants' Guild spanned a chest, or an Arafelan wore bells in her hair, a ruby decorated this man's ear, a pearl brooch this woman's breast. But for the most part, the traders' clothes were as subdued as their manner. A merchant who flaunted too much profit discovered it hard to find bargains. By contrast, farmers showed off their success when they came to town. Bright embroidery decorated the striding countrymen's baggy breeches, the women's wide trousers, their cloaks fluttering in the wind. Some wore colored ribbons in their hair or a narrow fur collar. They might have been dressed for the coming Beltane dances and feasting. Yet country folk eyed strangers as warily as any guard, eyed them in hefted spears or axes, and hurried along. The times carried an edge in Candor, maybe all along the borderlands. Bandits had sprung up like weeds this past year, and more troubles than usual out of the blight. Rumor even spoke of a man who channeled the One Power. But then, rumor often did. Leading Cat Dancer toward Canluum, Lan paid as little attention to the stares he and his companion attracted as he did to Bukama's scowls and carping. For all his talk of taking a rest, the longer they had remained in the south, the grumpier Bukama had grown. This time his mutters were for a stone-bruised hoof that had him afoot. They did attract attention, two very tall men walking their mounts, and a pack horse with a pair of tattered wicker hampers, their plain clothes worn and travel-stained. Their harness and weapons were well tended, though. A young man and an old, hair hanging to their shoulders and held back by a braided leather cord around the temples. The Hadori drew eyes, especially here in the borderlands, where people had some idea what it meant.
"Fools," Bukama grumbled. "Do they think we're bandits? Do they think we mean to rob the lot of them at midday on the high road?"
He glared and shifted the sword at his hip in a way that brought considering stares from a number of merchants' guards. A stout farmer prodded his ox wide of them. Lan kept silent. A certain reputation clung to Melchiori, who still wore the Hadori, though not for banditry. But reminding Bukama would only send him into an even blacker humor for days. His mutters shifted to the chances of a decent bed that night, of a decent meal before. Bukama expected little and trusted to less. Neither food nor lodging entered Lan's thoughts, despite the distance they had traveled. His head kept swinging north. He remained aware of everyone around him, especially those who glanced his way more than once, aware of the jingle of harness and the creak of saddles, the clop of hooves, the snap of wagon canvas loose on its hoops. Any sound out of place would shout at him. He remained aware, but the blight lay north. Still miles away across the hills, yet he could feel it, feel the twisted corruption. Just his imagination, but no less real for that. It had pulled at him in the south, in Kyrian and Andor, even in Tyr, almost 500 leagues distant. 2 years away from the borderlands, his personal war abandoned for another, and every day the tug grew stronger. He should never have let Bukama talk him into waiting, letting the south soften him. The Aiel had helped maintain his edge. The blight meant death to most men. Death and the shadow, in a rotting land tainted by the Dark One's breath, where anything at all could kill. An insect bite, the prick of the wrong thorn, a touch of the wrong leaf. Abode of Trollocs and Murdrol and worse. 2 tosses of a coin had decided where to begin anew. Four nations bordered the Blight, but his war covered the length of it, from the Arith Ocean to the spine of the world. One place to meet death was as good as another. He was almost home, almost back to the Blight. He had been away too long. A dry moat surrounded Canluam's wall, 50 paces wide and 10 deep, spanned by 5 broad stone bridges with towers at either end, as tall as those that lined the wall itself. Raids out of the Blight by Trollocs and Murdrol often struck much deeper into Kandor than Canluam, but none had ever made it inside the city's walls. The red stag waved above every tower. A proud man, Lord Varan, the high seat of House Marcassiaf. Queen Atheniella did not fly so many of her own banners, even in Chachin itself. The guards at the outer towers, in helmets with Varan's antlered crest, and the red stag on their chests, peered into the backs of wagons before allowing them to trundle onto the bridge, or occasionally motioned someone to push a hood further back. No more than a gesture was necessary. The law in every borderland forbade hiding your face inside village or town, and no one wanted to be mistaken for one of the Eyeless trying to sneak into the city. Hard gazes followed Lan and Bukama onto the bridge. Their faces were clearly visible, and their Hadori. No recognition lit any of those watching eyes, though. 2 years was a long time in the Borderlands. A great many men could die in 2 years. Lan noticed that Bukama had gone silent. Always a bad sign.
Be easy, Bukama.
I never start trouble,
the older man snapped. But he did stop fingering his sword hilt. The guards on the wall above the open iron-plated gates, and those on the bridge, wore only back and breastplates for armor. Yet they were no less watchful, especially of a pair of Malkieri, with their hair tied back. Bukama's mouth grew tighter at every step.
A landman Dragorin! The light preservers, we heard you were dead fighting the Aiel at the Shining Walls!
The exclamation came from a young guard, taller than the rest, almost as tall as Lan. Young, perhaps a year or two less than he, yet the gap seemed 10 years. A lifetime. The guard bowed deeply, left hand on his knee.
Tyshar Malkier!
True blood of Malkier.
I stand ready, Majesty.
I am not a king,
Lan said quietly. Malkier was dead. Only the war still lived. In him, at least. Bukama was not quiet.
You stand ready for what, boy?
The heel of his bare hand struck the guard's breastplate right over the red stag, driving the man upright and back a step.
You cut your hair short and leave it unbound,
Bukama spat the words.
You're sworn to a Kandori lord. By what right do you claim to be Malkieri?
The young man's face reddened as he floundered for answers. Other guards started toward the pair, then halted when Lan let his reins fall. Only that, but they knew his name now. They eyed his bay stallion, standing still and alert behind him, almost as cautiously as they did him. A warhorse was a formidable weapon, and they could not know Cat Dancer was only half-trained yet. Space opened up as people already through the gates hurried a little distance before turning to watch, while those still on the bridge pressed back. Shouts rose in both directions from people wanting to know what was holding traffic. Bukama ignored it all, intent on the red-faced guard. He had not dropped the reins of the pack horse, or his yellow roan gelding. There was that for a hope to walk on without blades being bared. An officer appeared from the stone guardhouse inside the gates, crested helmet under his arm, but one hand in a steel-backed gauntlet resting on his sword hilt. A bluff, graying man with white scars on his face, Alin Seroku, had soldiered 40 years along the Blight, yet his eyes widened slightly at the sight of Lan. Plainly he had heard the tales of Lan's death, too.
The light shine upon you, Lord Mandragoran. The son of Eliana and Alakir, blessed be their memories, is always welcome.
Seroku's eyes flickered toward Bukama, not in welcome. He planted his feet in the middle of the gateway. 5 horsemen could have passed easily on either side, but he meant himself for a bar, and he was. None of the guards shifted a boot, yet every one had hand on sword hilt, all but the young man meeting Bukama's glares with his own.
Lord Marcassiaf has commanded us to keep the peace strictly, Seroku went on, half in apology,
but no more than half.
The city is on edge. All these tales of a man channeling are bad enough, But there have been murders in the street this last month and more. In broad daylight.
And strange accidents.
People whisper about shadow spawn loose inside the walls.
Lan gave a slight nod. With the blight so close, people always muttered of shadow spawn, when they had no other explanation, whether for a sudden death or unexpected crop failure. He did not take up Cat Dancer's reins, though.
We intend to rest here a few days before riding north.
Rest, and try to regain his head. For a moment, he thought Seroku was surprised. Did the man expect pledges to keep the peace, or apologies for Bukama's behavior? Either would shame Bukama now. A pity if the war ended here. Lan did not want to die killing Kandori. His old friend turned from the young guard, who stood quivering, fists clenched at his sides.
All fault here is mine, Bukama announced to the air in a flat voice. I had no call for what I did. By my mother's name I will keep Lord Markasiev's peace. By my mother's name I will not draw sword inside Kanloom's walls.
Seroku's jaw dropped, and Lan hid his own shock with difficulty. Hesitating only a moment, the scar-faced officer stepped aside, bowing and touching Ching Ching's sword hilt and heart.
There is always welcome for Lan Mandragoran Daishan, he said formally, and for Bukama Maranellan, the hero of Salmarna. May you both know peace one day.
There is peace in the mother's last embrace,
Lan responded with equal formality, touching hilt and heart.
May she welcome us home one day,
Seroku finished. No one really wished for the grave, but that was the only place to find peace in the borderlands. Face like iron, Bukama strode ahead pulling Sunlance and the pack horse after him, not waiting for Lan. This was not well. Kanloom was a city of stone and brick, its paved streets twisting around tall hills. The Aiel invasion had never reached the borderlands, but the ripples of war always diminished trade a long way from any battles, and now that fighting and winter were both finished, the city had filled with people from every land. Despite the blight practically on the city's doorstep, gemstones mined in the surrounding hills made Kanloom wealthy, and strangely enough, some of the finest clockmakers anywhere. The cries of hawkers and shopkeepers shouting their wares rose above the hum of the crowd, even away from the terraced market squares. Colorfully dressed musicians or jugglers or tumblers performed at every intersection. A handful of lacquered carriages swayed through the mass of people and wagons and carts and barrows, and horses with gold or silver-mounted saddles and bridles picked their way through the throng, their riders' garb embroidered as ornately as the animal's tack, and trimmed with fox or marten or ermine. Hardly a foot of street was left bare anywhere. Lan even saw several Aes Sedai, women with serene, ageless faces. Enough people recognized them on sight that they created eddies in the crowd, swirls to clear away. Respect or caution, awe or fear, there were sufficient reasons for a king to step aside for a sister. Once you might have gone a year without seeing an Aes Sedai, even in the borderlands, but the sisters seemed to be everywhere since their old Amarlan seat died. Maybe it was those tales of a man channeling. They would not let him run free long, if he existed. He kept his eyes away from them, walked on quickly to avoid notice. The Hadori could be enough to attract the interest of a sister seeking a warder. Supposedly they asked before bonding a man. But he knew several who had taken that bond, and every time it had come as a surprise. Who would give up his freedom to trot at an Aes Sedai's heels unless there was more to it than asking? Shockingly, lace veils covered many women's faces. Thin lace, sheer enough to reveal that they had eyes, and no one had ever heard of a female murdral, but Lan had never expected law to yield to mere fashion. Next they would take down the oil lamps lining the streets and let the nights grow black. Even more shocking than the veils, Bukama looked right at some of those women and did not open his mouth. Then a jut-nosed man named Nazar Kuranin rode in front of Bukama's eyes, and he did not blink. The young guard surely had been born after the blight swallowed Malkir, but Kuranin, his hair cut short and wearing a forked beard, was twice Lan's age. The years had not erased the marks of his Hadori completely. There were many like Kuranin, and the sight of him should have set Bukama spluttering. Lan eyed his friend worriedly. They had been moving steadily toward the center of the city, climbing toward the highest hill, Stag's Stand. Lord Markasiev's fortress-like palace covered the peak, with those of lesser lords and ladies on the terraces below. Any threshold up there offered warm welcome for Alain Mandragoran, perhaps warmer than he wanted now. Balls and hunts, with nobles invited from as much as 50 miles away, including from across the border with Arafel. People avid to hear of his adventures. Young men wanting to join his forays into the Blight, and old men to compare their experiences there with his. Women eager to share the bed of a man fool stories claimed the Blight could not kill. Kandor and Arafel were as bad as any Southland at times. Some of those women would be married. And there would be men like Kirinen, working to submerge memories of lost Melkir. And women who no longer adorned their foreheads with the Kaisine in pledge that they would swear their sons to oppose the Shadow while they breathed. He could ignore the false smiles while they named him Alain Daishan, diademed battle lord and uncrowned king of a nation betrayed while he was in his cradle. In his present mood, Bukama might do murder. Or worse, given his oaths at the gate. He would keep those to the death. But Bukama's hands and feet were dangerous enough to maim a man for life. Varan Markasiev will hold us a week or more with ceremony, Lan said, turning down a narrower street that led away from the stand. With what we've heard of bandits and the like, he will be just as happy if I don't appear to make my bows. True enough. He had met the high seat of House Markasiev only once, years past, but he remembered a grave-faced man given entirely to his duties. Lord Markasiev would arrange those balls and hunts, and regret every one. Bukama followed without complaint about missing a palace bed, or the feasts the cooks would prepare. It was worrying. Along with regaining his own edge, he needed to find a way to sharpen Bukama's, or they might as well open their veins now.